And we'll start the meat of this episode by talking about NATO. NATO getting desperate. Because last week, French President Emmanuel Macron, he said that there is no consensus on this, but deploying Western troops to Ukraine in order to prevent Russia from winning is not ruled out. Not ruled out. So whose troops are we sending? Because he's saying this, it's not ruled out. It's always a possibility. Comments in line with the stupidity that took place just prior to this war back in 2021 and early 2022, when you had Jens Stoltenberg, and I use him as the poster child for how we were the problem. And the irresponsible statements that were made leading up to this war, Kamala Harris saying that, Ukraine, we're open to Ukraine join NATO. You have fucking Jens Stoltenberg saying that Russia doesn't have legitimate security interests in its own neighborhood that has invaded it multiple times in the past. At least three times that we can count in recent memory, with and more times the further back in time you go. Yeah, they don't have a legitimate security interest, apparently, to him. But not one to be outdone. Macron is now talking about boots on the ground in Ukraine. NATO boots on the ground in Ukraine. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the whole point of fighting this proxy war against Russia was specifically so that we didn't have to put boots on the ground, you know, theoretically, because we never had to put boots on the ground over there anyway. I'm talking about America here. But theoretically, the goal of this entire experiment, this entire project in Ukraine, was to fight Russia over there so we don't fight them over here, right? Which technically would be true for France, because they're on the opposite end of the European continent. Wasn't the whole point of giving Ukraine hundreds of billions of dollars worth of aid and weapons and munitions, wasn't the whole point of that? And training and military assistance and intelligence sharing? Wasn't the whole point of that so that you didn't have to put troops on the ground in Ukraine? And to add to that, wasn't Ukraine winning? I could have sworn Ukraine's been winning this entire time. What would they? I thought Russia was losing. I thought Russia lost half 50% of their military forces. I thought they lost 300,000 men. 80% of what they had at the beginning of the war. I thought they lost it all. What happened? Did Ukraine just win too hard that too many people left the front line and went back home? Like the Confederates after the Battle of Bull Run? They win the battle and they're like, you know what? This is going to be easy. We're going home. We're going home. You guys have got this. We beat them in the first battle. We're just a ragtag group of nobodies. We're just regular people. We beat the Union Army. Okay, we beat the Union. We're going home. All right. Did Ukraine just win so hard that they that people just let go of their enlistments and went back to their daily lives? Is that what happened? And now they're losing? What happened? I thought Ukraine was winning. I thought all this was so that you didn't have to put troops in Ukraine. I thought that this was the greatest investment ever. According to Lindsey Graham, is the greatest money we've ever spent. Now, I'm attributing things that the French president hasn't said, but it's not like he is out of line with these viewpoints, especially if he's now talking about boots on the ground in Ukraine. But what strikes me is the fact that I know France doesn't have that much of an army. Like, they're up there in terms of NATO countries, but quite frankly, that's not exactly a very high bar. There's United States, there's Turkey, there's Greece, and then there's France, right? Because Greece has a large army, like 500,000 in their armed services, and so does Turkey. Turkey has 500,000 as well. And that's because neither of them trust each other, and they're always prepared to fight a war with each other. in the case of Turkey, they're probably gearing up to fight a very different war that'll reshape the balance of power in their east, which given the propensity, the increasing propensity for peace in the Middle East, might reshape their attitudes towards their West. But we'll see about that. Turkey's a very oddball and very much a wild card in this changing world order. But aside from Turkey, aside from Greece, there's France, right? So it's, they're not a slouch. I'll give them that much. They are no slouch militarily, as one when compared to the rest of NATO. And that's the caveat here. When compared to the rest of NATO, France is not a slouch. They do produce all their own military equipment. That's a plus, right? They don't have to purchase anything from other people, unless they get into an actual fight and they run out of munitions, which is exactly what's happened all across of Europe. Everyone's out of munitions. No one can produce shells. No one can produce tanks. No one's really producing aircraft like that. The Russians are outproducing all of NATO in every aspect of military production, except for planes. Maybe, because I'm getting some news now that I saw a video talking about how many planes that the Russians have rebuilt. I have to watch that one. I have to watch it. But I want to compare those numbers with the numbers of planes that we have produced and NATO has produced, because they've outproduced us in every other realm. They've outproduced us everywhere, especially where it counts, which is artillery. We've been outproduced. The French are not fighting the Russians for more than 2 days. The British aren't fighting the Russians for more than 1 day. And that's assuming that they could land the army over there to fight them to begin with the current state of their military. So what? Well, what this guy's really saying when he talks about sending Western troops, NATO troops in Ukraine is not out of the question. We're not ruling that out. We're not ruling any of that out because we have to stop Russia from winning. What he's really saying is that he's willing to send his troops to Ukraine for the sole purpose of dying and triggering Article 5 to drag the United States into a direct conflict with Russia. And why would he? Now, why would he do that, you might ask? Why would he do that? Well, because we don't like Putin. We don't like Putin, and we don't want to ever look at or talk to or negotiate with a Russian. It's this intense racism towards Russia that is driving a lot of this policy. Because a lot of these people who advocate for these policies treat Russia as though it was the Antichrist. Now say I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong. You can't, because that's how these people operate. They treat Russia like it was the Antichrist, even though they're not. They're really not. They treat Putin as though he was the next Hitler. He is also not Hitler. He is not Hitler at all. He is a man. He is a man that you can talk to. He is a man who means what he says when he says it. So you can, if he says he's going to do something, you can trust that he's going to do it. Now, they've established in their head this fiction that the Russians are just liars all the time and that they can't be trusted, when really it's our own politicians who are habitual and impulsive liars. Putin does what he says he's going to do. You can like what he's going to do or you can dislike it, but at least you know that you're getting a fair hand when he says he's going to do something. They don't like Russia, and they don't like having to deal with Russia. And this has been true for the Europeans ever since Russia sort of bursted onto the scene in Europe as this gargantuan that no one European power could truly best, except for the Germans that one time in World War I. But that was due more for internal reasons in Russia than it was for them winning the war militarily. Which they did win militarily. Let's not pretend that they were at Moscow and Leningrad before Leningrad became Leningrad. They were St. Petersburg. But yeah, that one time, Sweden couldn't do it. France under Napoleon couldn't do it. Germany under Hitler couldn't do it. The Poles, the Lithuanians, they couldn't do it. Like, no one country was able to beat Russia because of how big Russia was. And over time, Russia just gained more and more advantages from the sheer mass of their own size, which is an advantage that they continue to have. And this gives them influence. But because they are who they are, and they're different from the Western Europeans, you have the Western Europeans, they just don't want to ever have to deal with the Russians, because the Russians represent a completely, oftentimes opposite worldview to their own. And you know how those liberals are when they start talking about democracy this and democracy that. It's always been this way between the West, which used to just be, you know, Britain, France, maybe Spain, the Netherlands, the West, and Russia. They've rarely gotten along, except for that those two times where they had to fight Germany. But they don't like having to deal with people with different viewpoints than theirs. They like being able to stomp on people with different viewpoints than theirs. They don't like having to deal with. They don't like having to account for. They don't like having to accommodate countries with different viewpoints than theirs. They just want to dominate. And they would love to dominate Russia, but Russia is too big and too powerful for them to dominate. And this has usually been the case. There are rare instances where Russia is vulnerable enough to where you can do that, but those instances are rare. And this hatred of Russia carries over to the modern day, to the point where we're talking about NATO boots on the ground in Ukraine, a country that is not in NATO, mind you, to fight Russia, a country that we promised we wouldn't expand NATO towards after the collapse of the Soviet Union, a country that we've made promises that we were going to help end the war in the Donbass to. We promised the Russians we would help end the war in the Donbass. We lied to them for 8 years so we could arm the Ukrainians for a war against Russia. And now that all that has blown up in our face after we overthrew Ukraine's government in 2014, which instigated the war in the Donbass to begin with, after all of this blew up in our face, the only thing these people have to say for themselves is, let's just double down on war with Russia. It's not, oh, we were wrong, oh, my bad, we made a mistake, we fucked up, guys. No, it's, we're just going to go to war with Russia now. That's what he's saying. We're just going to go to war with Russia now. Ukraine is losing, all right? Fighting an indirect war with Russia isn't working, so we're just going to fight a war with Russia now. And all these SEALs are clapping along, or at least that's what I thought was going to happen. But what actually happened was he said this, and then Germany was very quick to distance itself from Macron's statements. Very quick. Which is very peculiar and good for Germany that they did that. Not that they're doing themselves any favors by continuing to fund and arm Ukraine. But at the very least, you haven't gone full retard. But Macron's statements here, while publicly they are being rebuked, there are a lot of these Ukraine simps in the halls of various governments in NATO who agree with everything he just said. And you know they agree with what he just said, because we are all being expected to sacrifice for Ukraine. Suddenly, Ukraine is the noble cause that everyone has to sacrifice for because World War II. Right. Notice the propaganda machine and the way they've shaped the battlefield for the media narrative, right? Support Ukraine, or else you're Neville Chamberlain. That's how they frame this. Either you're gonna support Ukraine to the bitter end, no matter how much of your own equipment you use up, no matter how much of your economy you throw away, no matter how weak you make yourself in the process by disarming effectively, by giving all your weapons away to Ukraine, no matter how badly it gets for you, either you give weapons to Ukraine and you make the hard decision to keep going along with a really bad policy, or else you're Neville Chamberlain and you're appeasing Hitler. Have you noticed that's how the propaganda machine is working? Now, why is that? Oh, it's because all of these leaders who all hate actual democracy, who all hate the idea of their voters getting a say in what they do, all these people who hate Russia with a burning passion, they all have their priorities set on destroying Russia. And because they are so out of touch with their own populace, they don't really care about the consequences of their policies towards their populace, which is why you're seeing all these populist revolts breaking out across NATO countries. But just focusing in back on these ruling classes, they all agree with what Macron said. They all agree. They all talk about it. And there's been multiple threats made over the course of the war to try to convince us, primarily the United States, to send more weapons and more aid to Ukraine. Well, they're fighting the war so that we don't have to. You have to give money and weapons to them. You're a bad person if you don't want to give money and weapons to Ukraine. It's just every dirty tactic in the book, manipulation, blackmail, browbeating. It's at every step of the way, it's just manipulation and propaganda to get us to go along with this. But they wouldn't be going to such lengths if they did not agree with what he said. And again, on multiple occasions, we've heard these comments said before, just from lower rank politicos, not a head of state. And that's what sort of distinguishes this from the other times that we've heard these things. Annalena Baerbock of Germany. Remember when she said she doesn't give a goddamn? Okay, she didn't say all that. Remember when she said she doesn't care what German voters think? We're going to support Ukraine for as long as it takes. Remember when she said that? She meant that. They all meant that. Biden said it for as long as it takes. Blinken said it for as long as it takes. For as long as it takes. For as long as it takes. They all agree with what this guy Macron said. It's just that the taboo was saying it publicly. Macron has said it publicly. Which indicates, one, that he's jumped the gun on this, and that there still isn't really a consensus on whether or not to do this. Whether or not now is the time to do this, because they're all talking about it. They all think that it's something they should do, but they don't know if now is the time, or if they should wait a little bit, or if maybe Russia really is going to collapse, or how they're going to go about it exactly. You know, even though they're still going to fuck up on the execution, but you know, they at least want to think about this before they go through with it. This indicates that there's either the plan is there's a faction of these people who want to go through with this, and he's sort of voicing that to force the hand of the rest of these leaders to double down on the insanity, because you can't walk back the statement, which made Germany interesting, because they did sort of walk back from his statements. So I think that what he was doing was an attempt to try to get the rest of NATO to sort of nudge them closer to that direction. And by the rest of NATO, I'm really talking about the United States. Because what's the rest of NATO going to do? What is the rest of NATO going to do? They can't do anything. They don't have militaries. It's only the United States. Greece and Turkey are not going to take their troops away from one another because they don't trust in each other. So they're immediately off the table. And that's two of the largest NATO militaries outside of the United States. And then the Turks are preparing for a war against fucking Israel anyway. They're not going to go to war with Russia. Fuck all that. They've already been bribed with a gas hub deal. But this insistence on fighting Russia, a European insistence, because America doesn't need to be over there, right? This Western European insistence on fighting Russia, an insistence that is even stronger in Eastern Europe, because they were occupied by the Russians for the Cold War, so they really don't like Russia. This European insistence on fighting war with Russia, combined with the incapacity of the European states to fight this battle that they're so eager for, it does exemplify exactly why NATO is every bit as dangerous to the United States as it is to Russia. Because who would be fighting this war against Russia if the Europeans don't have the militaries to do so themselves? To even contribute in any real way. It's not going to be the French. It's not going to be the Germans. We already said it's not going to be the Turks or the Greeks. No. It's going to be us. It's going to be us. And that's the goal. What is the purpose of NATO? The purpose of NATO is to keep Russia out, to keep America in, and to keep the Germans down. You keep the Russians out, preventing Western Europeans from ever being challenged in any meaningful way on the continent. You keep America in because America is the only Western country with the strength to challenge Russia, But America is far away. And by keeping America in, you prevent America from distancing itself politically from Europe. And therefore, you can cement the power of the Western powers, the Western European powers, on the continent of Europe. So that they never have to consult with or talk to or make any kind of agreement with a Russian. You know, they are blatantly racist toward the Russians. It is such a strong and unavoidable observation at this point. And then there's number three, you keep Germany down because Germany is the second most powerful nation in Europe after Russia. They're the third most powerful Western country, again, after the United States and Russia. And because of that power, because of that strength, they, if they were truly sovereign and independent, they would be a separate center of power in Europe, and thus another voice whose opinion matters, that the Western powers, Britain, France, that they would have to consult with when trying to do things in Europe. And they don't like that. They already don't like having to deal with the Russians. They certainly don't want to have to deal with a third pole of power, which is Germany. And they want America there with them so they can always impose their will on the continent. But if NATO goes away, the Russians can come in and provide a true balance of power in Europe. The Germans can come up, which would also work towards a balance of power in Europe. And America can leave, which would force the Western Europeans to talk to the other Europeans instead of trying to impose their will on the continent, as they always try to do. But that's the purpose of NATO, to keep us tied down in Europe, to keep the Germans down, and to keep the Russians out. The purpose of NATO is to prevent a balance of power in Europe, and to maintain Western European dominance of this continent, using America as the sort of engine for that strength and dominance. And you can see this on full display with these comments from the French president. He wants Americans to go fight and die against Russians so that Western Europe can maintain Western liberalism as a whole, because it's not just Western Europe, but that's the sort of epicenter of it. But so that he wants Americans to go fight and die against Russians so that Western liberalism can maintain its dominance on the continent. He wants Americans to go fight and die against Russians so that the Russians don't ever get a win, so that Putin doesn't get a win. We're not going to let Putin win. You notice that it's always personal. It's always about stopping Putin. We have to stop Putin. We can't let Putin have a win. We can't let Putin have this and let Putin have that. It's so childish. But that's the nature of the people we're dealing with. These are the people who run your countries. In NATO, if you live in NATO, which unfortunately we do, but perhaps we won't for much longer. But I'll digress. That part remains to be... Whether or not we will actually end up leaving NATO does remain to be seen. I think the destruction of Ukraine is going to be the catalyst. That's going to be a very, very big catalyst for a lot of countries very deeply reconsidering NATO, the United States in particular. That's the destruction of Ukraine, in spite of having spent hundreds of billions of dollars on Ukraine. And all the nonsense that we have had to endure in our domestic politics to maintain that flow of goods and supplies to Ukraine, just for it all to blow up in our face and result in nothing, that's going to be the catalyst, I believe, for us leaving NATO. But that remains to be seen. In the meantime, we get boneheaded proposals like this from boneheaded people.